But before we go into these, there's just one little misunderstanding to be cleared up. If you read books about Buddhism, especially popular books, and especially perhaps books or articles about the Mahayana, you'll find it sometimes said that the Bodhisattva is not concerned with his own salvation, that he's concerned with the salvation of other beings. You may sometimes read, people sometimes put it rather poetically, that the Bodhisattva postpones his own entry into Nirvana. He sees, as it were, the gates of Nirvana shining afar off, and he says, no, I'm not going to pass through. I'm not going to enter. I want to help others to get there first. And very often the Bodhisattva ideal is presented in this quite appealing and quite attractive poetic form, that he's postponing his own enlightenment so that he can help others to get to enlightenment first. And in this way you'll find in some works on Buddhism, in some literature on Buddhism, the Bodhisattva comes to be contrasted with the Arahant. The Arahant is the perfect man, the realized man, if you like, of the Theravada. The Arahant is said to be concerned only with his own salvation, with his own emancipation, and the Arahant ideal is said, therefore, to be selfish. And in contrast to this, the Bodhisattva ideal is said to be unselfish. And the Arahant ideal is said to be individualistic, and the Bodhisattva ideal is said to be altruistic. And in this way you find in some Buddhist works, or some works on Buddhism, some literature on Buddhism, that a sort of controversy develops with even people taking sides. And you'll sometimes find that the followers of the Arahant ideal criticize the followers of the Bodhisattva ideal, or criticize even the Bodhisattva ideal itself. And sometimes they say, sometimes they point out, that charity begins at home. Here is the Bodhisattva wanting to help others to gain enlightenment, but he hasn't gained it himself. So they say that this is like a person trying to pull others out of the ditch when he's right in the ditch, in the mud, himself. And they say, well, this isn't possible. First, you must get out yourself, and then you can help others out. Now, the Arahant ideal may or may not be selfish. I'm not going to say anything about that this evening, but one can say that the Bodhisattva ideal itself is certainly not one-sided. This is the misunderstanding to be corrected. The Bodhisattva ideal doesn't represent altruism as opposed to individualism. The Bodhisattva is not concerned with saving others as opposed to saving himself. As I've already said, the Bodhisattva synthesizes opposites. He synthesizes the two, helping oneself and also helping others, wisdom and compassion. And he synthesizes these opposites in the spiritual life of altruism and individualism by practicing dana and sila, or generosity and uprightness, as we shall see in a few minutes. Now this sort of tension, this tension between altruism and individualism, regard for others and regard for self, is not confined to the spiritual life. This sort of tension, this sort of clash, if you like, occurs at each and every level of human existence, from the bottom practically to the top. After all, we exist as individuals to begin with, but we also exist as members of society. That is to say, we exist in relation to other individuals. Now, we have our own needs. We have material needs for food, clothing, warmth, shelter, and so on. We have our psychological needs. We have our emotional needs. We have our spiritual needs. And obviously, we have to consider these. We have to consider our own needs. This is inevitable. It's unavoidable. But others, too, have their needs. Needs of the same kind as our own, usually, at least in principle. And these two we have to consider, because we have to live with other people. We have to live in society. We cannot ignore altogether their needs. But sometimes it happens, in fact often it happens, that the two come into conflict. Our needs as individuals and the needs of other individuals, the needs of society. And this can happen in the wider social context, the wider life of the community, or in our own very personal life. Our needs come into conflict with the needs of others, or at least with the needs of one other. But at the same time, despite that conflict of needs, or at least that tension between needs, we continue to depend upon others, and others continue to depend upon us. And thus it comes about that we find ourselves in a familiar and rather painful predicament. We find that sometimes we cannot live with other people. But at the same time we find that we can't live without them. It's rather like the snake in the fable. The snake in the fable swallowed a frog, but owing to its curved front teeth, it couldn't vomit the frog out, and at the same time the frog was so big it couldn't swallow it, so it just got stuck. It could neither come in nor go out. So we are very often just like that with people. We can't live with them, apparently, and also, it seems, we can't live without them. One might say that if we can't live with people, we can't live without them. I think that takes a little thinking over. And conversely, if we can live with people, we can live without them, right? And vice versa. This is paradoxical, but true. And we can probably say that only those who can live without people, mind you, can live with them. Now, what we need, undoubtedly, is a social context which will enable us to do both. Enable us to live with people and also live without them. To regard our own needs and regard the needs of other people. To be altruistic and also individualistic. And this, perhaps we may say, is the meaning of living in community. However, this is probably taking us just a little too far afield, and perhaps it's in any case more suitable as a subject for discussion than as part of the lecture proper. And perhaps it's time we got back to our dana and sila.